was a Persian poet who lived in the 1300s. And I wanted to tell you just a couple of conventions of Persian lyric poetry, which is that he's going to mention the beloved, and it's with a capital B, and that refers to the divine. And also, it is conventional, often Persian poets will talk about themselves in the third person, so you'll hear him talk about himself by saying Hafiz. Like if I were to say, Malia is talking to you now. So before I start, I would like us to just take a moment and ground ourselves and center ourselves. So I'd like you to put both feet on the floor. Just sit comfortably. Close your eyes if you want to. Just feel your sit bones beneath you, grounding you to the earth. And from the crown of your head, feel yourself rise. And just take a breath. Listen. Listen more carefully to what is around you right now. In my world, there are bells from the clanks of the morning milk drums, and a wagon wheel outside my window just hit a bump, which turned into an ecstatic chorus of the beloved's name. There is the prayer call, rising up like the sun out of the mouths of a thousand birds. There is an astonishing vastness of movement and life emanating sound and light from my folded hands and my even quieter, simple being and heart. My dear, is it true that your mind is sometimes like a battering ram, running all through the city, shouting so madly inside and out about the 10,000 things that do not matter? Hafiz, too, for many years, beat his head in youth and thought himself at a great distance, far from an armistice with God. But that is why this scarred old pilgrim has become such a sweet, rare vintage who weeps and sings for you. That is why Hafiz will forever in his verse play his cymbal and call to you, oh, listen. Listen more carefully to what is inside of you right now. In my world, all that remains is the wondrous call to dance and prayer rising up like a thousand suns out of the mouth of a single bird.
Today we have our first senior chapel talk of the 2023-2024 academic year. For those of you who are new to this community, this is an opportunity for a member of the senior class to speak to us about what they've learned here, to reflect on their time, to encourage us, to challenge us to hold fast to the mission of our school, and to carry forward those traditions and ethics that guide us to become more fully beloved community. So it is with great pleasure that I introduce today's senior chapel talk by Onala Henson.
Hi, everyone. If you will, stand up. Close your eyes. Notice how you feel. Notice the ground beneath your feet. Notice the slight smell of incense from our chapel service earlier. Open your eyes and look at the people around you. The person you talked to at lunch. The teacher that took the time to share their knowledge with you earlier today. Look at the old wood on the pews. Look at the art around you. that someone took care to bake. Look at the light coming through the windows. Look at me, the person who is talking to you. You can sit down now. Now I'm going to tell you the story about my first experience with death. Before I begin the story, I want to acknowledge that the reality of death is difficult to talk about because all of us here are at different places in our journey, and each individual has had a lot, a little, or perhaps almost no experience seeing this part of life. I will also speak briefly about suicide and self-harm as a part of this talk. Be mindful of your own needs during this talk. If you need a moment to step outside because this topic is overwhelming for you, please do so. Our mental health counselors are available if you want to talk to someone. If you leave the space, be sure to check in with an adult before you depart. Lastly, remember that all of us care deeply about you and never want you to have to face struggle alone. My first experience with death was when my dog Ash passed away at the beginning of my sophomore year. I had lost people before Ash died, but this was my first-hand experience with death. Ash got sick at the beginning of the school year. We weren't sure what was wrong. He just stopped eating and began to wither away. Before he got sick, Ash had been a nervous and a playful dog. He was afraid of thunderstorms and men. He wouldn't sleep at night unless he was in my head with his head on the pillow and his body under the covers. He liked to run circles around the yard in what fits of my sister and I called the zoomies. Around late September the year that Ash got sick, my family took him on a short fishing trip. The day was cool and crisp, so we left him for short periods of time with the windows rolled down. At one point, I gave him some chicken broth and walked away to spend time with my family, while he smiled at me with his head out the car window. I returned to the car around a half hour later with my little cousin clutching my hand. Ash was lying limp on the car floorboard. The paws with their pink pads weren't twitching like they usually did while he was sleeping. His face was drawn taut, expressionless. I shook Ash and yelled at him to wake up. I picked his body up in hopes that I would feel that breath I had felt every night while going to sleep for the past 5 years. I yelled at him to wake up again. My little cousin stood back and watched me for several moments. "I think he's dead, Nala," he finally said. "Nala, I think he's dead," he restated, fearfully when I didn't respond. I felt Ash's dry tongue one more time and turned to look my cousin in the eyes. Later that day, I tried calling one of my close friends so that I could have someone to talk to. She didn't answer the phone, so I sent her a text message relaying the news. She replied by saying, "Well, maybe it's better for him now. All this stuff doesn't really matter, right? We know how it's going to end." My grief was strong, and I didn't know what to say, so I turned my phone off and spent time with my family. We watched a movie together and tried to eat dinner, while being acutely aware of the fact that we couldn't fill Ash's fur under the table or his head on our laps. My mind kept returning to the words of my friend and turning them over in despairing circles in my head. I had wanted her love and support, but instead I felt that I had been shown a glimpse of a part of her that I could see and hear, but never understand. At around 10 p.m. that night, I received a call informing me that she had tried to take her own life. In ninth grade at SAS, I had spent so much time planning, striving, reaching. During my academic days, I stressed over tests and papers and worried about grades. During the evenings, I worked on homework until I fell asleep. I gave my thoughts to the future and neglected the present. Though I enjoyed the process of learning and the beauty of the campus around me, my mind almost always contained the thought pattern: get good grades so you can get into a good college without debt, so that you can have a good career, so that you can have a good life. I had unconsciously let my primary motivation become deeply connected with ideas of the future. After the death of Ash and the attempted suicide of my close friend, planning, striving, and reaching started to feel empty and meaningless. Shortly after my dog died, I told my mother I was burdened by the guilt of not being present when he died. My mother told me, "Well, sweetie, your grandfather could have died from a car crash on the way back from fishing. You never know how much time you have with anybody." It was then that I realized that all life is fleeting and impermanent, and that even my life is fleeting and impermanent. The combination of the events around me and my realization made me begin to feel as though striving for the future was meaningless, because the future would inevitably hold an end for all living creatures, including myself. What was the point in reaching for the future if the future would only hold this terrifying and gaping unknown? And since at that time I had decided that striving for the future was meaningless, so many aspects of my life began to feel empty because my life had been completely shaped around preparing for a future. I then entered a battle into my mind where I fought to find meaning or substance to life. But I didn't fully find a state of meaning until Phenology in the Rain in the middle of my junior year. I was feeling tired and done with my day, a feeling I'm sure many juniors could have related to that year, the day that Ms. Chelsnick sent us out to do Phenology in the Rain. For clarification, Ms. Chelsnick is the former biology teacher, and she had us pick a single spot in the woods, our phenology spot, to observe every week for a year. That's what we were doing the day she sent us out in the rain. That day, I was at first exasperated because I would have liked to get ahead on a project we were working on for the class, but then the rain hit me. The cold rain soaked every part of my phenology spot. It seeped into my sweater and made my teeth chatter. It weighed down the ferns and made them sink to the earth. It soaked the soil, which in turn covered my pants. It made the colored pencils I was using in my journal flow and blur down the papers. The cold rain made me acutely aware of every part of my body, from my beating heart to my twitching fingers. It made me notice every vivid thought that ran through my mind. I was suddenly amazed by the fact that I existed here, in this drenched ecosystem. The rain made me remember that I was fully alive. Over the next several months, my life began to regain meaning and purpose. Ms. Carlos had always begun her classes by saying that she hoped to inspire a lifelong love of reading, writing, and learning among her students. And after the rain moment in biology, I tried to start seeing all classes as an opportunity to enjoy learning instead of a way to reach a goal. I delighted in learning about native fungi, mycon, and moss in biology. I loved doing experiments that had meaning and purpose in advanced chemistry. I enjoyed discussing the cat on the hot tin roof and Miss Dalloway in my literature classes. I also began to pay attention to life outside of my classes. I rediscovered my love of piano and used my musical skills to work with the cast of Into the Woods. I found the bravery to try acting for the first time and have fun being a forester in Robin Hood. I took the time to talk to people in the halls. I sat outside at lunch with friends and talked and laughed. At home, I tried to manage my perfectionism so that I could spend time with my family and dogs. And my sister helped me to notice the beauty of the land immediately around me so that I could stop reaching to an imaginary location for fulfillment. I was beginning to relearn the art of accepting and loving my life. There is nothing wrong with spending time preparing for the future. It is a necessary activity that can be done with purpose and enjoyment. But I urge you not to sacrifice your happiness and well-being in the present for ideas of success and happiness in the future. If you continue this pattern throughout your life, you will always be sacrificing because the future will never be now. And life matters because of now. The reality of death does not make the now meaningless. Ash's life, though it is over, has value because of every moment he laid his head on my pillow or ran around the yard with his tongue flying in the wind. Life matters because of every moment we spend living it. But if we spend every moment striving for an imaginary future, then we can often fail to notice that our life is happening now. Life matters because of the ground beneath your feet. Life matters because of the slight smell of incense from our chapel service earlier. Life matters because of the people around you, the person you talked to at lunch, the teacher that took the time to share their knowledge with you earlier today. Life matters because of the old wood on the pews. Life matters because of the art around you that someone took care to make. Life matters because of light coming through the windows. Life matters because of me, the person that is talking to you right now. Life matters because of you, the people that are listening to my words. So as you go forth through this day, I encourage you to focus your attention away from the future and towards the now. As you walk away from here, notice the cool air that is coming in. Notice the sound of people around you. As you go to your next class, I urge you to focus your attention on what you are doing, not because you want to make a good grade, but because you want to go through the process of learning. Take some time in your day to notice where you are and who you are with. Take some time to notice the pain, the joy, the beauty, the darkness, the love. All of these incredibly complex and fleeting elements that make up your incredibly meaningful life. After doing phonology of the rain that day, I began the process of knowing this. If you are always outstretching your arms towards the future, trying to find something, then the tips of your fingers will only touch emptiness. But if you reach your arms out to the present moment, then your fingers will feel wet dirt and tree bark and cold rain and ferns soaked in the water that is giving them life.